Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Samach Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins the second line from the bottom of Daf Samach Zayin Omid Beis. You'll notice a triangle around Rabbi Hanina. This is the last of a series of incidents of stories involving Maisim that are associated with Tzedakah. This Maisa also has in it an additional marking, a bow tie marking, which ties it into the previous bow tie shape that you see, where you see a situation, as we indicated on the side with our bow tie marking mivne indicator, where the receiver of the tzedakah appears to be someone doesn't really need tzedakah. So Rabbi Hanina have ahu anyo to have a rogil lishturi le arba zuzi komali shabata. There was a particular oni, an impoverished individual, that Rabbi Hanina was accustomed to sending him 4 zuz. Zuz, a certain denomination of money, 4 zuz every Erev Shabbos. Mali Shabbat Erev Shabbos. Yumochad, one time, one day, one time, Shadrinu Mihale Biadavisu. He sent the money with his wife. In other words, Rabbi Hanin himself didn't go, but the wife went. Asoi, she came back. Omra lay, and she told her husband, Rabbi Hanin, Lo Tzorech, this man doesn't need your tzedakah. My chosis, what did you see? So she answers, Shami Dahave Koamri Lay. I heard that in his household they were asking him, Bima Atas So'ed. And the Gemara continues at the top of Sama Chesom and Aleph, Betoli Kesef or Betoli Zohav. What should we set up on the table? So'ed means eat. What kind of napkins do you want us to set out for you to eat with? With silver ones or with gold ones? Rashi says that the Toli Kesef is a reference to linen, white linen ones, or silken colored ones. What's described here is it's an individual that seems to be of financial comfort, to put it lightly. Tosfos points out at the top that in this story we don't see a reaction like we did in the previous story about a person that is overly mefunuk, a pampered individual, because in the previous story you were dealing with the issue of wine being used for ziluf on the ground, for keeping down the dust, as was the practice in those times with dirt floors. He apparently needed to have that wine fragrance, otherwise he wouldn't be able to function. That's a situation, an area in which pampering mifunok, extremely delicate individual, where that is a possibility, and therefore he really has to be catered to. Here, you're dealing with something that's an objective sign of opulence, and hence this is someone that does not need tzedakah. The type of napkin one uses is not that type of thing that subjects an individual to excessive pampering or a sign of delicateness and as a result, he needs this. Rather, if he's using these things, he is definitely a well-to-do individual. And now Rabbi Hanina goes on with a point, a long point. Omar Hainu di Omar Rebelozer. With this type of situation, I now we can now appreciate that which Rebelozer says. It's based on this that Rebelozer says, Bo v'nachzik toivo l'ramoyin. We owe a debt of gratitude toward the phonies, the Ramoyan, the tricksters. Shilmolei hein, if not for the fact that in the general public there are these kind of people, hayinu choitim b'chol yoim, we would be guilty of sinning in the area of tzedakah every day. Rashi says on the second line from that, hayinu choitim sha'anu malimim ayin minu aniyim. We have a tendency to walk by people that, let's say they stick their hands out, they make themselves as if they're impoverished, and we don't pay attention to them. Avolachshav ramayim gormim lanu. But now with this, let's say, awareness that there are phonies out there, it's this that causes us to walk by and not pay attention, with us thinking that maybe this guy's not for real. And since it's a reality that there are people there out there that are not for real, so from this Gemara, it then would be, from Rebbe Lozer's comment, it would then be concluded that the fact that we walk by the poor man, we're not a sinner. Because if you did not have phonies out there, walking by a poor man, or let's say walking by a definite poor man, that and not assisting him, not aiding him, that would be a sin. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'kara alecha el Hashem v'haya b'chachet." He will call out to Hashem. He will complain, so to speak, to the Almighty, how people don't help him, and that is your sin. But as we just said, with thanks to the fact that there are fakers out there, that saves us from being guilty of this particular sin. Of course, this is given a situation where you simply don't know the man's status. However, if there's someone that definitely needs assistance and you have the means, you have some wherewithal in order to assist him, that would be a problem. V'toni Rabbi Chia bar Rav midifti. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha Omer, kol amalim eino min atzdoka, anyone who looks aside, hides himself from performing charity, kilu oyved avodas kechavim, he's tantamount to being an idol worshipper. And this we see through a word comparison that's featured in the upcoming lines. Ksiv hacha, hishomer lucha pen yeh dovorim luvovcha b'lial v'chulei. It says in this context, this is a posik from Dvorim, Perek Tezvav posik Tes, which deals with the problem of the indigent, and one who hides himself from them, one who doesn't care for them, is considered being involved with a devar belial. Uksiv hasam, and it says in the context of an idol-worshipping city, what's called an ir hanidachas, yotsu anoshim b'nei belial. There you see again the same expression of belial. The word belial means, it's a compound word meaning beli oil, without the yoke of heaven on him. So ma'ala halon avodis kechavim, there, just like over there in Dvorim Perek Yud Gimel Posuk Yud Dalet, it is a case of idol worship. Af kan, so too within the context of hiding oneself from ignoring tztoka needs, avodis kechavim, it's considered as if one is guilty of idol worship. Tonu Rabbanan. And here we have a source that views this same situation of phonies, not from the public side standpoint, but from the phony himself. And you see that he is asking for trouble. One who does not need stuck up and creates the impression that he does, the following source addresses that. So the Tonu Rabbanan, Hamasames Eino, one who makes himself as if he has as if his eyes are blind, v'matzves bitno, and he inflates his belly, creating himself like he's a famished individual, and you have belly bloating, which is a sign of intense hunger, v'mekapech es shoko, one who creates this situation as if he is lame, eino niftar min ha'olam ad shiyovo lidei kach. He will eventually experience these things in reality. In other words, he doesn't leave this world until he actually suffers from these things that he was feigning prior to this. Hamekabel tzedaka v'ein tzorech lekach. Someone who receives charity and does not need it. Sofo einu niftar min ha'olam ad shiyavo lidei kach. At the end, he won't leave the world until he actually needs tzedaka. Tanan hosam. Ein mechayven oisoy limkor es beisoy ve'es klei tashmisho. The source says that we do not expect of a person who is in need of money to sell his house, nor to sell his vessels. In other words, it's true that a person is in a situation where he doesn't have money, and if he were to sell off his house, he would have money. But we don't expect him to do that. The Gemara asks, "Velo, is that really so? That we have no expectations in this area?" V'ha tanya hoya mishtamish b'kli zov, mishtamish b'kli chesef. If someone doesn't have, let us say, he doesn't have cash, but he has golden vessels, he should sell the golden vessels and replace them with silver vessels, and with the balance, he will have the means of buying what he needs right now. So that before taking tzedaka, you do have to sell off your wares. B'kli kesef yishtamish b'kli nechoshes. Or, if he was using silver vessels, he can sell them off and buy copper ones that are, of course, less expensive, and the balance of value that he receives in the sale, he will use for his own needs. And all this is before taking charity. So how do we resolve these two sources, where the first source says, you don't have to sell your klei tashmisho, and here we see that you do. So we have several approaches to this topic. Number one, Omar of Zvid, lo kashya. There isn't any contradiction. Ha b'mita v'shulchan, ha b'kaisos ukaros. If you're dealing with a bed and a table, those items one would be expected to sell the more expensive version and buy the cheaper one. When it comes to cups and bowls, kosos ukaros, cups and plates, or cups and bowls, one is not expected to do so. The more asks, my shnor kosos ukaros delo, what is unique about cups and saucers that we say not necessary? De Omar Mi'isili, the person can say, I find it unpleasant. Literally, it's disgusting to me to use the other kind. Well, Mita v'shulchanami Omar, with regard to the bed and table, could he not also say Lo makabel iluvoi? I can't withstand it. I'm used to this. I can't withstand using the other kind or the lesser kind. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rava Brei de Rabba. He has another approach to the issue of what we expect him to sell. B'machresha de Kaspa. The term machresha is something that's, if Rashi himself does not explain the word. So in the absence of a Rashi explanation, one would ordinarily translate this word as a plow. In other words, someone had a silver plow, using a plow made of some other less expensive material wouldn't make one bit of difference to the individual. And that kind of vessel one would be expected to sell off. There's a commentary on the side that's quoted that Sahresha is a type of scrubbing brush or something else that someone uses in a bathhouse where he scrapes his flesh with this item. The lotion on the side is Megardin Bobaves Hamerchots. One Megardin Legared is to scrape or to rub with this in the bathhouse. So it's a type of vessel, apparently, that using a lesser valued vessel that accomplishes the same ends would make no difference to the individual. So we would expect him to sell the machresha de kaspa to buy a lesser kind of machresha. And number three, Rav Pop Amar lo kashya. There is no contradiction between the two sources above. Kan kodim shiyavo lidei giboy, kan la'achar shiyavo lidei giboy. The word giboy means from the word goveh, to be collected from. If it's a person that, let us say, simply when he is taking the charity, he has vessels, but he doesn't have, and when he is taking the charity, he doesn't have any cash. He really needs cash for his purchases of food, his immediate needs. He doesn't have cash for his immediate needs. So a person like that is called Kedem Shiovelo De Giboy. So he does not have to sell off his vessels. However, there are people that will ask for money that right now have their own funds. They don't need to take the money right now. And yet they do. People like that that take money when they don't have to, they in effect are going to owe that money back to the public funds. They are going to be collected from. Well, people like that who put themselves in the position by taking money they didn't need to take and thereby incurring a debt to the public funds, they are going to be expected to sell off their wares, as was mentioned above. Now we take a look at Rashi to see this explanation. On the upper part of the narrow lines, Kan Kodim Shovelu De Giboy, Hadis Nanein Mechayv, in that which we said, you don't have to sell off your wares. Meikora Koi. It's speaking about a situation at the outset. Kishibol Lito Leket V'lo Hoyulo Masayim Zuz. Leket is one of the forms of agricultural tithes that are left for the poor. So when he's coming to collect the leket, the poor man's tithe, and he didn't have 200 zuz, he didn't have that amount of money, which by having less than 200 zuz, you are thereby entitled to take the leket. V'mhoya moicher kalei tashmishu, a person might have had, let us say, he had in his possession 199 zuz. Well, at that moment, he's entitled to take the poor man's tithe. Had he sold his klei tashmisho, hoya masig lo mosayim zuz, it would have put him over the minimum amount, and he would have been able to, he would then not have been allowed to take the leket. Nevertheless, ein mechayven oso limkor. If right now you don't have 200 zuz, you don't have that in your savings account, we do not expect you to sell your wares in order to put you over that minimum amount to thereby deprive you of the leket. So regarding a person like that that has 199 zuz or less, we don't expect him to sell his wares. The hod is not mechayven. The source that says we do expect him, as we saw, to sell off his more expensive wares and replace them with cheaper ones. La'achar shebo lidei giboy, what does that mean? La'achar shehevi atzmoi lidei kach. After this guy brought himself to that, shebeisdin goyven heimenu, Bezdin will then insist that he sells off his wares. Kegoin shehoyolo mosayim zuz. The individual, before he took the tithes or the charity, he had 200 zuz. V'notal leket shechupeya. And he took anyway leket shechupeya, the different types of tithes left for the poor. And then it was discovered that he was a man of means. When we say a man of means, it means he had 200 zuz, and thereby ineligible for taking the leket shechupeya. And he did anyway. Based in boyin v'goyven heimenu, the court will come to collect from mashen notal that which he took. We'll say illegally. The im ain lo kedei l'shalem, and if he doesn't have the means of compensating Bezdin for that which he took, mocher klei tashmisho hayikarim umishtamish bepchusim, that kind of person is expected to sell off his wares and use and buy cheaper ones. Before we continue with the Mishnah, let us just make a general remark regarding charity and the issue of the fakers, and basing ourselves on a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zorah, if I'm not mistaken, that one being that there is this concern of fakers out there, one is obliged to seek out a, we'll say, a charity fund where the one in charge of it is very responsible. And he will screen out the fakers, the phonies, and thereby ensure you that when you are giving to that fund, it will go to those who are truly needy. So that's our individual obligation to give charity, but to a charitable situation, a charitable need concerning which you have a sense of, you have a type of guarantee that it's going to go to those that are truly in need. Before we continue with the new Mishnah, we have a general topic heading on the side of the one. They call this a Nosei Klali, Klali being a general topic heading. And we also indicate that this goes till Samach Tes Amud Beis. We have a rather long topic ahead of us. Gvias Parnosa, which we call Nedunya Isur Nichsi. It's a collection of funds in anticipation of an orphan girl's marriage. Mizonos, Parnosa and Mizonos. Parnosa includes the dowry, and there's a concept known of Isur Nichsi. Isur Nichsi is a tenth of her father's estate. It's a rabbinic enactment that even though on a Torah level the male heirs are the sole heirs of the estate, rabbinically speaking, females, girls that are left in the fam that are also, we'll say, orphaned by the man's passing, they rabbinically are entitled to receive Isur Nichsi, a tenth of the estate. So we're going to be dealing with appropriation of funds from a father's estate for Parnosa. As we said, that's the Nidunya and the Isur Nichsi, Umezonos. Mezonos are the food money, Minichse Avia, from a woman's or a girl's father's estate, Achare Moso, after his passing. The Mishnah. Yisoimo, Shisioso Imo, O Achiha, Midata. Yisoma is a girl orphan. We speak about orphan, we're speaking in these sukkis about orphan from father. And she's married off by her mother or by her brother. Midaita, meaning with her approval. And she, even though she approves to the following financial arrangements, v'kosfu lo b'meya o b'chamishim zuz, and they wrote over. It's like you say, you write a check. In other words, they assigned toward her marriage 150 zuz, and she, as a minor, she agreed with that. When she reaches adulthood, when she becomes, she goes over 12 years of age, which is halachically speaking a gedola, she can extract from them that which is fit for her. And that is a reference to the Isur Nechosin, that, and Rashi points that out, the tenth of the estate. So even though as a minor, upon entering Nisuin, consummation of marriage with a man, and her agreement, we could say her foregoing of parts of the estate, when she reaches adulthood, she can say, I want that which is coming to me. Very simply put, the forfeiting, the mechila of a minor, ein mechilasa mechila, as Rashi terms it. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im heisi es abas orishona, if the father, while he was alive, married off a daughter, his first, we'll say the first daughter, and then he died, and there are more girls to be married off. Then we would give to the second daughter toward her marriage the way, the same amount that the father had given for the first daughter's marriage. And we add here, even if it's not a tenth of the state, whether it's less, whether it's more, the main point, according to Rebuta, is that in a case where there was precedent established by the father himself during his lifetime, that is the amount that we would give toward the marriage of a subsequent daughter. The terms oni and oshir are terms that will wait for the Gemara to explain. Because they literally mean that sometimes a person is poor and becomes rich, or he's rich and becomes poor, but again, that's just a literal translation. We have to leave room for further interpretation. So sometimes you have this change in status, and therefore you can't rely on father precedent. And as a result, we have to assess the value of the estate, and in accordance with the assessment, provide for her. On the side of the Gemara, we have the Nosei topic heading, Dino Shel Shmuel, Kishimasiyan, that means the law of Shmuel, Kishimasiyan Es HaYesoima V'roitzim Likboa Kama Loseis L'Nedunya, when an orphan girl is being married off, and we want to establish how much to give toward her dowry, Shomin Be'av, Kama Ho'av Imhoya B'chaim, how much would the father, if he were alive, Hoya no same law, what would he give her? The Gemara. Omar Shmuel. Lefarnosa Shomen Bav. The term Lefarnosa is a term we'll associate here with the dowry, the amount of money we give a girl toward her marriage. How much money would she bring with her into the marriage? So how much is it? If the father is not around to himself, give the money. So Shomin Bav, we make an assessment in accordance with the type of man that father had been. Was he a generous type individual, a magnanimous type individual, or a miserly type person? The Gemara raises a question, and we have a new marking scheme. You'll see if you scan down the page, you'll see how this geometric form, the trapezoid or volcano shape, appears in an alternating direction. So on the side under the Mivneh heading, you see that the volcano with the narrow part or the cone facing upwards, that's Kushos al Shmuel, represent questions on Shmuel, and the inverted form indicates Tshuvos, responses. Meisvei. We have a Tanaic source that presents a question. Habonos Nizonos umisparnesos minichse avihem. The daughters are nizonos. They receive their food and their parnosa from their father's property. Ketzad. How is this done? Ein omrim. We don't say ilu hoyo ilu avio kayem kach v'kach hoyo noisein la. If the father were alive, this and this amount is what he would have given. Ela shomin es hanechosim venos nimla. Rather, we assess the value of the estate, and we emphasize, we wrote in between the lines, velo shomin ba'av. In other words, not like Shmuel. We don't do that. We don't assess what the father would have given, but rather we make an objective assessment of the estate, and venos nimla, based on that, we would provide for the girl. My lav parnosas habal. Now we had dashed underlined the word umis parnosos, and we hesitated in translating that, and because right now we want to assume, in order to formulate the question, that it means the nedunya, the dowry. And if it means the dowry, like Shmuel said, then this source would be a problem because it says shomen es nechosim and not shomen ba'av. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, he responds in defense of Shmuel, lo, rather beparnosas atzma. We're talking about a different form of parnosa. It means the food that she eats while she is still with the brothers. The Gemara asks, how can you say that umisparnesos means the food that she eats while she's still a part of her father's household with her brothers there? The ha nizonos umisparnesos katoni. The Tanaic source itself seem to make reference already to food by using the word nizonos, my love, achas, and since it used both expressions, nizonos and misparnosos, so is it not so that achas parnosos habal, the achas parnosos atzma, that one of the two is in fact the nidunya? And still it says ein shomin ba'av, contrary to Shmuel. Lo, that's not so. It's true there are two expressions in the original source, nizonos or misparnosos, but rather idi v'idi v'parnosos atzma. Both words, nizonos and misparnos, are references to the girl's own, we'll say, bodily needs, and not a reference to the dowry, the funds that she brings into the marriage. Below kashya, and the double expression is not problematic. Ha bachilo b'shtiya, ha b'levusha v'kisuya. Nizonos is a reference to her food and drink needs, and misparnesos is a reference to her various different kinds of clothing needs. Regarding these, we say we evaluate the property. We assess the value of the property. But when it comes to a topic not covered by this source, but rather, namely, the dowry money that a girl brings into the marriage, there we follow Shmuel. We assess the mindset, the character of the father, the deceased father. So far, Shmuel is okay. Tanan, we have a problem, though. We quote from our Mishnah. V'chachomim omrim. Note, by the way, that this is a long question. V'chachomim omrim. Pe'omim shodim oni v'heshir o ashir v'heni. Sometimes you find a change in the father's status, and therefore we have a problem in relying on that. Rather, in order to determine how much is to be given, we evaluate the estate. We assess the amount the estate is worth. My oni umay oshir. What do those words mean? Those very words that we hesitated in explaining before. E nemo oni equals oni benechosim, oshir equals oshir benechosim. If you say that the words are to be taken literally, poor meaning poor in terms of financial status, rich in terms of financial standing, And with that in mind, we have to then go back to the earlier part of this of the Mishnah and see what would he, the other opinion, say. Michlal, the Tanakama Sovar, would you say that the Tanakama also holds Afilu Oshir Veheni Kedemei Kora Yahavina La? According to the Tanakama, we saw the Tanakama, let us say, the earlier Tanaic opinion. We saw, for example, Rabbi Yehuda said that if the father, when he was alive, married a daughter off, when it comes to the marriage of the second daughter, will give to her the same as the first daughter. So, would you say that if the man had been wealthy when he married the first daughter, before he died, he lost his wealth. And when it comes then to marrying off the second daughter, after the man is gone, after the father is gone, we're going to give toward the second daughter the way the Me'ikara means the first daughter had been married. But Hal Lesley, there aren't funds anymore for that, because before at the point that he died, the father became impoverished. Elolav. So therefore, the term oni and oshir cannot be left as it is, meaning financial standing. Rather, elolav oni equals oni bedaas. Oshir equals oshir bedaas. That means a mindset. Oni would mean a miserly type individual, And usher, meaning wealthy, meaning a benevolent or magnanimous type mindset. Vikotani, shomin es hanechosim v'nosnim la. By the way, we should look at Rashi, oni bedas, ein bedaito litain la nedunyas oshir elo nedunyas oni. So the Chachomim had said, sometimes a person has this kind of feeling about him and to give little, and sometimes a person has a change of mind or is whatever, some type of internal psychological change causes him to give a lot. So you can't determine what the father would have done, because the father himself vacillates. A person vacillates. So in order to determine how much we shall provide the girl, the Chachamim said, Shomen es hanechosim venos nimla. We assess the estate, how much it's worth, and in accordance with the value of the estate, we'll provide the girl. Alma, what do you see from all of this? Lo azlinon boser umdina. We don't follow the assessment. Umda means an assessment of the father. In other words, imagining what the father would have done. Utyufta de Shmuel, and then this would represent a refutation of Shmuel. Shmuel said, we evaluate the father, what would he have done. And here you say, we don't do that. The Gemara responds, who the Omar Kerebi Yehuda? Shmuel follows the Tanaic opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Disnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im hesi bas harishona, inosein l'shnia kederech shenosan l'rishona. If the father had married off a daughter, and by having married her off, we see what kind of person he was. When it comes to marrying off the second daughter, we follow what he had done, what type of precedent he had set up. And the approach that Rabbi Yehuda mentions is therefore the basis for Shmuel, namely, evaluate the father. What would he have done? The Gemara asks, V'neimo halochik Rabbi Yehuda, why doesn't Shmuel simply say, instead of the parnosa shomen ba'av, which is what Shmuel said at the opening of the Gemara, why doesn't Shmuel say, the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda? Answer, I omar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, had Shmuel stated that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, have amina, I would have thought, davka hesia, de goli daite. I would have thought that the idea of following the father is only when the father had actually married off a daughter, where he revealed himself in a concrete fashion what his thinking was. Avalo hesia, if you have a situation of a man that died without actually having married off any one of his daughters, lo, I would have thought that that concerning that, Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't have said what he does. Komash malon taimo de Rabbi Yehuda. So Shmuel is revealing to us the underlying reason behind Rabbi Yehuda. Das linon boser umdena. What led Rabbi Yehuda to say that if the father had married off the first one, married off a first daughter, giving her X amount of money, and using that as the basis for the subsequent daughter marriages when the father is no longer around, that the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda is that we follow his mindset, lo shna hisia v'lo shna lo hisia, making no difference whether there was an actual demonstration of his mindset in concrete terms by an actual marriage having taken place, nor if there was not an actual marriage that had taken place. We analyze the kind of man he was. It's true that it's easier for us to conclude that if he had actually married the girl off. But it's not that we're simply making what we would, in the old days, we would call a carbon copy, that we're simply, or cut and paste of what the father had done because of an actual precedent, but rather it's a function of our looking into the kind of person he was, making no difference whether he actually had married a girl off or not. V'hai dikotoni hesia, that which the source had mentioned under in Reb Yehuda's name, married off, that he had actually married off, the example cited in the context of Reb Yehuda enables us to see how far the Rabbonan who argue on Reb Yehuda go. The afagav the hesia v'goli daita, even though you have a man that had married off his daughter, revealed the kind of person that he is. Lo azlinon basr umdina. The Rabbonon who argue with Reb Yehuda, they will not follow evaluations. They insist on assessing the estate. So with this explanation, we can see that Shmuel, who said Shomin Ba'av, is based on the Tana Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda, he is the one that says we evaluate the kind of person the father had been, regardless of whether the father had actually married off a daughter or not. We look into him as a person. Was he a magnanimous type individual or a miserly type individual? Omar Lay Rava L'Rav Chisda. Rava points out to Rav Chisda, Darshinon Mishimcha, they teach in your name, Rav Chisda, Halacha Reb Yehuda, that the Halacha follows Reb Yehuda, that Shomin Ba'av, that we evaluate the mindset of the father in order to determine how much to give toward the orphan girl's wedding. Omar Le, Rav Chisda responds, Yehi Rava, that's an Aramaic expression, in Hebrew it's a Yehi Ratzon, in which it should be the will of heaven, Kol Ki Hani Minim Al Yasa, all kinds of positive teachings like this, Tidrishu Mishamoy, should be said in my name. The Gemara asks, regarding Rava, Mi Omar Rava Hochi, would Rava have said such a thing? In other words, from the context of this discussion, it seems that Rava also subscribes to this idea of Shomin Ba'av. V'hotanya, but we have learned in the following source, Rebbe Omer, Bas Hanizoynes Min Ho'achin, a girl who is an orphan girl, she's supported by the estate inherited by her brothers. Noitelis Isur Nechosim. She receives, toward her marriage, she receives 1/10 of the estate. Simply put, we're not Shomin Ba'av. Yoma Rava Hilchasa Karebi, and Rava himself rules like that. So a moment ago we got the impression that Rava holds like Reb Yehuda Shomin Ba'av. Here, we don't see that. We see Isur Nechosim, 1/10 of the estate. That's an objective standard, not a function of Shomin Ba'av, assessing the father. Lo Kashya. There is no contradiction in presenting Rava holding both of these opinions. Ha de Amidne, ha de lo Amidne. The word Amidne, like the word Umdina, which is shomin, means evaluated. Hadi amidne means where we know we had evaluated and known the father's mindset. Where we knew his mindset, we knew the kind of person he was, so then you would follow the that would be like Reb Yehuda had said. Hadi lo amidne, if we have a situation where we didn't know the kind of man he was, then in the absence of knowing the kind of man he was, we would do the Isser Nichsi. So that Rebbe's ruling that Rava subscribed to is a case where Lo Amidne. Rashi adds, For example, the man lived far away. He didn't live amongst us, and we never really got to know who he was, what kind of person what he was. Was he a Vatron? Was he a magnanimous type person, or a Kamsan, or a miserly type person? Hochi nami mistabra. This approach is also likely that where he was, his mindset was known, Rebbe himself would say shomin ba'av. The Amar of Adabarava, Maise Vinosan Law Rebbe, Echod Mishnei Mosor bin Chosim. It was an incident that Rebbe provided for an orphan girl 1/12 of her father's estate. Now 1/12 is not Isor Nechasim. Isor Nechasim, that we saw the line before with in Rebbe's source, is a tenth. So Kashyon Ahadodi, would you say that these two records of Rebbe's ruling are contradictory? No, Elolav, Shma Amino. Rather, we have to conclude Ha de Amidne, Ha de Lo Amidne, where the father's mindset was known to us, and in the case where Rebbe gave a 12th, we knew that that's what the father would have given, that amount, the 12th of the estate, or the value of a 12th of the estate. And where Rebbe said, Isur Nechasim, that's Ha de Lo Amidne. That's a case where it was not known, and where it's not known, so we follow we'll call it the rabbinic enactment of 1/10. Shma Mina. So this is conclusive. This point of our original resolution of Rava is conclusive. Gufa. We now present the Tanaic source cited above in a more complete fashion. Omar Rebbe, Bas Hanizoynes Mino Achin, Noiteles Isur Nechosim. A daughter that's being supported by her brothers. In other words, she is an orphan. Her father passed away. She's drawing her support from the estate. When she is to get married, she receives a tenth of the estate. Omru lo l'Rebbe. The Rabbonon asked Rebbe, L'dvorecha, according to you, min sheyesh lo eser bonos uben. Imagine a man died leaving 10 daughters and a son. Ein lo laben b'mokli bonos klum. Is it so that the son will get nothing in the presence of these daughters? If one daughter gets a tenth, 10 daughters get 10/10. That means all of it. To the girls and the son, they're getting nothing. Omar lohen, kach ani omer. Rebbe responded and said, thusly I say, Rishoina noiteles isur nechosim. Now, the thinking right now, Rashi explains that this is the Salka Daitin, this is the initial thought. The Gemara will change it, though. The thinking is that the first girl to get married shall take 1/10. Shnia b'ma shishaira. The second girl will take that which remains. In other words, a tenth of that which remains. So that if the estate was worth $100, the first girl would get $10. The second girl, you subtract $10, you're left with $90. So the second girl would get $9, leaving a balance then of 81. Ushlishis b'mash shaira. And the third girl would get that a tenth of that which remains. So that if $81 had remained, she would get $8.1. And then the girls would repool the money and divide equally amongst them. So you would take $10 and 9, that's $19, and then 8.1, that's 19 plus 8.1 was 27.1, and divided three ways, so you would get 9.033 per person. That's the calculation as we read the source as it is. The Gemara asks, why do things this way? Kol chado v'chado d'nafsho shakla. Why do you say that they re-pool? If the source is to be read as it is, that you have an estate, there are orphan girls, and we'll say year one after the father died, one girl gets married. So she gets, of the $100 estate, she gets a tenth. One tenth, that's $10. Several years later, the second girl gets married. So she would then get one tenth of $99. Why, after so many years that all the girls get married in the course of the time, did they have to re-pool whatever they received? Now, the Gemara says here at the top of Amud Beis, we read this, read it again, Kol chado v'chado d'nafsho shakla. Each girl should receive that which she received at that time and keep it. No re-pooling. Why is there a need for re-pooling? The Gemara says, you're right. Hachi komar, you have to understand the source thusly. In bo kulam linose ka'achas cholkeis b'shove. If you have a family situation like that, where after the father died, all the girls end up getting married at the same time, then the method of distribution of funds would be, as we said initially, each one gets a tenth of that which remains, and then there would be a re-pooling. The Rashi says at the top, Kol chado v'chado d'nafsho shakla, this was in the question, shouldn't each one just get what they got at the time they got married? The Chachomim tiknu lehem nedunyas nisuin iser nechosim. The Chachomim established that an orphan girl that gets married, she gets one tenth of the estate. Vanisei's Rishon zochsa be'isur shebefaneha. The first girl to get married, she duly receives one tenth of that which is in front of her. And at that point, there was $100 estate. She gets $10. V'loma yachsu v'chalku shisurein shove b'shove. Why would one think shuv b'shove? That is, why should one think that there should be a subsequent re-pooling of the funds? So we said that that's correct. There is no re-pooling of the funds under circumstances like that. Rather, Rashi continues, in bo kulom linose ka'achas chozes v'chokos yisurein b'shove. If the girls came to get married at the same time, then there is this method. She'en kan koidemes lizchus. There isn't any girl that has first cracks. Hilkoch bishvil haroi lishoy lifnei haben. There, because in this case we have, let's say, 10 daughters coming to get married at the same time, in order that something should be left for the son. Then we go with that method that we mentioned, that the first girl gets a tenth, the second girl gets a tenth of that which remains, and after each girl got a tenth of that which remained, they re-pool, divide it out, and that way something will be left for the son. If there was 100 mona, we said $100. The first one would get 10 monim. The second one would get 9 monim. Vashlishis shmoine mona v'isur shel mona, 8.1 mona. V'chein kulam kidei levara yerushas haben. V'chein. Now this method of taking a tenth of the balance, that will always be a balance, and that ultimate balance will be the amount the son inherits. And the girls that are coming to get married at the same time will then re-pool their tenths, their respective tenths, and then divide equally amongst themselves. We continue in the Gemara on the third line from the top. This supports the approach of Rav Matona. The Omer Rav Matona, imbo linose kulam keachas. If all the girls came to get married at once, notlos isur, we skip the bracketed section, keechod. Notlos, we read notlos isur keechod. That's the final reading of the Gemara. They will take their their 10th at once, at one time. Now, let's reread the bracketed section. The Gemara on the fourth line from the top said, if they came to get married at all together at the same time, notlos isur echad. They take a total of one-tenth of the estate. So the Gemara asks, echad sakadev, well, just one-tenth? You have several girls getting married and all together they get just one-tenth? Ela notlos isur ke'echad. They come to take their tenths at the same time. And that's as we already explained above. As you can see, there's a slash mark here indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we read, Haim yesh gil, is there an age, o matzav, or status, shabbas lo yechola ligvois parnasosa, where she can no longer lay claim to the isur nechosim. Tonu Rabbanan. Abonois bein bogru ad shelo nisu uvein nisu ad shelo bogru ibdu mizono sehen velo ibdu parnososan. Divrei Rebbe. The girls, the orphan girls, whether they bogru, means they reached adulthood of 12 and a half years of age, and they reached 12 and a half years of age before entering nisuin. Or they entered nisuin, they consummated a marriage, achila bogru, prior to the age of bagrus. So girls that were either bogros or nisu, ibdu mizonosam, they lose their food rights. The lashon, the text of the original ksuba had stated, when, in other words, the ksuba of their father with their mother had stated that I will support the girls until they reach bagrus or until they are married off. So that it's based on the original ksuba text that the girls, that the daughters from that marriage at either one of these points in time do not draw mizonos anymore. However, the Rebbe says, "Velo ibdu parnososan," they don't lose their rights to the isur nechasim. Rebbe Shimon ben Elozer Omer, "Af ibdu parnososan." Girls that reach bagrus without having gotten married, when they get married, they will lose privilege of receiving a tenth of their father's estate. As Rashi says, Af ibdu parnasosan isur nechosim. They will lose that isur, that tenth of the estate privilege. Because Sovar, he is of the opinion, that's Reb Shimon also of the opinion, Lo tikun lo nedunya, Elohecha de minsiba bekatnus obenarus. A concept of drawing a dowry from an estate toward marriage is only with regard to minors or narus. Narus are girls up till between 12 and 12 and a half. Aval bogra, but if you have a girl that reached bagrus, istalka lome beisa legamri, she is completely removed from that household. V'chein niseis benarus. Likewise, a girl that entered Nisuin as a Nara, Hail Ugedoilo he, Vinisratzets, since she entered the marriage without demanding the Isur Nechasim, and she, Nisratzets means she willingly forfeited it, Ibda Parnasasa Elama Sheposku, Avol Nises Bekatnus Not Lo Polig. However, if you have a girl that gets married as a minor, there you'll find no argument. Let's continue in the Gemara. Ketzad hein oisais, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, girls realize that if they reach bagrus and have not yet got married, so they won't get their Isur Nechosim. So what do they do? So as to not lose the parnosa, Sochros lohen bailim umotzien lohen parnasosan. They hire men to agree to marry them prior to their reaching bagrus, and upon that marriage, this we'll call this arranged or hired marriage, they will extract a tenth of their father's estate. As far as what happens after that, so one would surmise that then these hired husbands will divorce the girls and be done with it. But that way they were able to extract their tenth. As far as what I just said is just an extension based on surmising what might take place, even though that's not necessarily the case. The main thing is that girls that were approaching Bagrus and saw that they were not married yet and they're about to forfeit their tenth, they would do something unusual, and that is to hire men to marry them. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Li Huno, Hilchiso Kerebi. So Rav Nachman quotes Rav Huno saying that the law follows Rebbe, namely that a gedola will also be entitled to the nidunya, to that dowry. On the side, we have a new, we have a mivneh heading for this sugya. The diamond that we have already seen highlights Rebbe, and the house marking highlights Rava. These markings will be of benefit to us as the Gemara continues. So, Esve Rava L'Rav Nachman. Yesoima, an orphan girl, a minor orphan girl, Shesiyasa Ima O Ochel, that was married off by her mother or her brother. This is a power vested in mother or brother of orphan girl, to marry off the Yesoma, the minor girl. The Kosvula B'mea O B'chamishim Zuz. And they wrote as her dowry 150 Zuz. Yecholo hi mishetagdil lahoitzim yodam asheroi li nosein la. When she becomes an adult, so she can extract from the state that which she deserves, namely Isur Nechasim. This, by the way, was our Mishnah. And now we infer, Taimo Diktana. This idea that the girl is entitled to extract from the estate the Isur Nechasim is because she was married off as a minor. Ha Gedoyla Vitra. However, if you're dealing with a gedola, she would forfeit. Well, that is like Reb Shimon ben Elazar. That's not like Rebbe. So that our Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, that section of the Mishnah has no name associated with it. It would appear to be authoritative. It's therefore a problem for Rava's that's Rav Nachman's ruling. Rav Nachman ruled like Rebbe, and yet here you have a Stam Mishnah, an unnamed Mishnah, which, as we say, that carries with it authority, which reflects the opinion of Reb Shimon Elazar, not Rebbe. Loi Kasha. There is no contradiction here. In other words, ruling like Rebbe and accepting our Mishnah. Ha de machoi, ha de lo machoi. That which Rav Nachman said, like Rebbe, that the gedola, the adult girl, does not forfeit the isur nechasim, that's de machoi, where she literally protests, where she insists on receiving it. An inference that we made from our Mishnah that Gedola Vitra, that the Gedola would forfeit it, is Delo Machoy, where she kept quiet. She didn't say anything. She didn't insist on her receiving that balance. Hochi Nami Mistabra. This approach, this resolution of Machoi versus Machoi, that will make a difference, is also likely. In Cain, if you don't accept this distinction, then Kashio de Rebbe ad de Rebbe, you'll find an internal contradiction within Rebbe. Desanyo Rebbe Oimer, notice the diamond again. This is here to enable you to associate the statement here with that which was above. So it says here, Rebbe Oimer, Bas Hanizoinis Menoachim, Noitelis Isur Nechosim. A girl that is being supported food-wise by her brothers. That tells us something. That tells us you're dealing with a ketana. You're dealing with a minor. It says she is entitled to the Isur Nechosim. Upon her marriage, she gets a tenth. Nizainis in, she'ena nizainis lo. Now, nizainis means a ketana is entitled to the Isur Nechosim. If she is a gedola, she's not entitled. That means the gedola vitra, the gedola forfeits. Ah, but above where we saw Rebbe in a diamond, he said, Lo yivdu parnasasan, elo lav, shma mino, rather, in order to resolve what otherwise would appear to be a contradiction, you have to say, ha de machoi, where she insists, where she verbalizes, she vocalizes, she protests that she wants that Isur Nechosim, then that's the Rebbe above, that lo yivdu parnasasan. Where she remains silent, that's what we infer from this most recent diamond. Only a Tana would receive, but a Gedola who remains silent forfeits. Shma Mino. This resolution is therefore conclusive. Omar Lei Ravina Larava. Omar Lon Rav Ado Bar Ahava Mi Shimcha. We have a few names right here in this line of Gemara. Ravina speaks to Rava, and Ravina reports that Rav Ado said in your name, namely Rava's name, Bogra Eino Tzricha Limchois. Nises Eino Tzricha Limchois. Bogra Venises Tzricha Limchois. 3 points. Let's go over them. Number one, she reached Bagrus. She doesn't have to protest. In other words, even if she remains silent, she does not lose her rights to the Isur Nechosim. If a girl is Nises, she does not need to protest. She's Nises. She gets married as a Nara. I emphasize even as a Nara, meaning technically speaking she's an adult. She's Nises. Even if she is a Nara, she does not lose her Isur Nechosim. However, if you have Bogra V'Nises, she reached Bagrus and entered marriage, Tzricha Limchos, in order not to forfeit the Isur Nechosim, she has to speak up. We ask, Mi Omar Rava Hochi? Does Rava really say that? That a girl who is a Nara, that's Nises, she does not lose the Isur Nechosim even if she remains quiet? V'ho Esvei Rava L'Rav Nachman Yasoima. Use your arrows and the markings. What did we see above? We saw Rava pointing out as a question to Rav Nachman the case of Yesoma, that means the case of our Mishnah, which involved a ketana, and we made an inference that only a ketana, she's a minor, she's under 12, only in that case does she not forfeit the if she married as a ketana, she does not forfeit the Isur Nechosim. However, as a gedola, now a gedola means over 12 years of age, including a Nara. Hagedola Vitra. And here, we're pointing out that Rava says about a Nara, who is a Gedola, she is Lo Vitra. So that this Gemara, the question that we're raising, which we're asking a question, would Rava have really said what he said most recently, that namely that which Rav Ado said in Rava's name, that a Nara who is Nises is Lo Vitra, but above Rava had seemed to indicate that she is Vitra, she does forfeit. And above in the discussion, when Rav Nachman was confronted by the question that Rava posed, the Shani lay, and the response that had been given above was Ha de Machoi, Ha de Lo Machoi, that if she protests, then the Gedola does not forfeit. But if she remains silent, then the Gedola forfeits. So we see in conclusion of this particular question, we see that a girl who's Nises as a Nara, if she remains silent, she forfeits. Yet, 3-4 lines ago, in the number 2 of the 3 halachas, we saw Nises, Eino tzricho limchos, that if she enters Nisuin, even as a Nara, she does not have to protest. So this would appear to be a contradiction within Rava's. The Gemara says, Lo Kasha. Ha de ko mitzino minayu, ha de lo ko mitzino minayu. We're focusing on a Na'ara Shenises. Does she have to protest in order to retain her rights to the Isur Nechosim? Or that's not necessary? So it depends on whether she is mitzina minayu or not. Let us go through the Rashi in order to appreciate this. Rashi, just across from here, a line or two down, you see a triangle. Ha, diyama rava, nises benaris, eino tzricho limchos. A girl who enters nisuin as a nara doesn't have to protest. She's entitled to her isur nechosim. Kegon de ko mitzina minayu lachar shenises. This is a situation where she's receiving her food support from the brothers, from that very estate, after she entered Nisuin. The Mishum de Komitza Minayu, Hu de Koshoska, Velo Mochla Parnasosa. Because she continues to draw support, Mizonos support from them, it's not comfortable for her. In Hebrew, they use the expression Lo Naim. It's not a pleasant. It's an uncomfortable situation for her to insist on receiving even more. After all, she is being supported by them for food support at this point in time. She's a Nesua, but she's still a Nara. And if she is still drawing her food support from them, don't expect her to speak up. So therefore, her silence is not indicative of forfeiting. Her silence is simply because it's uncomfortable for her to speak up. Therefore, in a case like where she's mitzinov, word mizonos, she's receiving support from them, her silence is not forfeiting. So she's still entitled to it. Rashi continues, the next triangle. V'adikotoni ha'gedola vitra. And there, that which we inferred from our Mishnah, the first Rava house marking, that's the case above where we inferred that if she is a Gedola, she loses out. That's the lo komitzino. She's not. She is a Nara that entered Nisuin, and she's not receiving support from the brothers anymore. So there's no reason for her to remain silent. There's no issue of comfort anymore. Therefore, if she wants to get that Isur Nechosim, she would have to speak up. As you can see, there's a slash mark indicating that which follows is a new trend of thought. Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rebbe, Parnoso Eino Kitnai Ksuba. Parnoso, Rashi says, a reference to the Nidunya, the dowry a girl brings into marriage, is not treated like Tanai Ksuba, the Ksuba conditions. The Ksuba conditions referred to here is the support that orphan girls draw from their father's estate. The Gemara now asks, "My Eino Ketanai Ksuba." When Rebbe says, as Rav Huna quotes him, saying that the Parnos is not like Tanai Ksuba, what do you mean? What halachic ramifications does that statement have? And notice you see triangles on the side of the Gemara. We have a Nose Mivne heading. The triangles represent Shlavim. These are stages. Bebiru Pirush Hadin Sherebi De Parnosa Eino Ketanai Ksuba. What did Rebbe mean by that? So we go through several stages. Number one, Inema. If you were to say Deilu Parnosa Tarfo Mimishabdi, Utnai Ksuba Lo Tarfo Mimishabdi, that Parnosa, for the Nedunya payment to the girl, we can collect from Mishubadim. Now Rashi adds here, Mimishabdi Shishibdu Achin Velo Shishibet Ha'av. That which properties that the brothers had sold off, properties from the estate that the brothers had sold off, not that the father had sold them off. If that's what it means, that the Parnosa can collect for the dowry purpose, we're able to collect from those properties, and for the Mizonos we cannot collect from those properties. My komashmolon, what is the big news that Rebbe is revealing here? Ha maise bechol yom, it happens every day, meaning it's poshit motzien leparnosa ve'ein motzien lemezonos. It's very well known that for the parnosa, for the dowry, we will collect from those properties that the brothers had sold off. And for mezonos, we do not collect from those properties. Rashi points out general background, but it's important information. Lo tarfa mimeshabdi, afilu shibdu achin, even if the brothers had set up those properties as a source of collection, and then source of collection, my understanding is for the mezonos, for the girls' food allowance, it still is not going to be effective. Disnan, the Mishnah in Gittin teaches, Ein motziim lachilas peros l'shvach karkois l'mozon ishva bonos. We don't collect for these different kind of payments. We don't have to explain each one, but do note mozon habonos is featured here. Minachosim mishubadim ibnei tikkun olam, because of the disruption to commerce and market activity. Namely, if a person would buy property and the property he buys would be a source of collection for the previous owner's female relatives, people would not buy and sell properties because they would feel a certain sense of risk. Who knows? One day there's going to be an unlimited type collection for food maintenance of these relatives, of these female relatives. That's called the tikkun olam consideration. Aval parnosasa tarfa, but for the parnosa payment, there the girl would be able to collect from those sold properties. The Rabbonon made the girls as if they were creditors at the point the father died. So they have first crack at all those properties. And why, with regard to Parnosa, do they have first crack at it? The Dover Kotzavu, it's a set amount, meaning the father died leaving an estate worth $100. At that point, it's known that the daughter that survived, the orphan daughter, she has a claim of $10. Therefore, people who buy properties from the brothers understand that if they want to remain safe from the girl's collection, they'll buy up to $90 of the properties, leaving 10 unpurchased. so that the girl would be able to collect from that. Avol mezoinos ein lehem kitzva v'yesh bohen mipnei tikkun olam. But when it comes to food costs, there's no fixed amount. The father might leave an estate worth $100, but we don't know how much the food bill will run up. Therefore, we don't enable girls, the female relatives, the isha and the bonos, to draw their mezonos collections or payments from sold properties. That would thwart economic activity. We continue in the Gemara, still not understanding the quote of Rebbe that Rav Huna cited, that Parnosa is not like Tnai Ksuba. If it's regarding this distinction regarding collection from Mishubadim, from properties that the brothers had sold, that distinction is too obvious. It's very well known. I don't need Rebbe to tell me that. V'ela, rather, suggestion number two. De'ilu Parnosa, Gavya, Nami, Mimetalteli. Utnaik Suba, Mimekarki, Gavya, Mimetalteli, Lo Gavya. Maybe this is a distinction. That for Parnosa, for the dowry payment, for the Isur Nechosim, she has a right to collect even portables that her brothers inherited. The food payment that she is entitled to receive, that's collected only from the sale of land that they inherited, but not from portables. Maybe that's the distinction? Not so. Because Le Rebbe, according to Rebbe, Edi v'Edi, Migva Gavya. As far as Rebbe is concerned, even Tanai Ksuba, the mezonos payments, the girls, the women, are entitled to collect from Metaltalin. Desanya, the source, tells us this in the name of Rebbe. Echod nechosim sheshel machrayas, that expression of nechosim sheshel machrayas means real estate, land. The echod nechosim shein lemachrayas, that's an expression referring to portables. Motzien lemozon ho'isho lebonos, divrei Rebbe. We do use them as payment for even the food needs of the widow and the daughters. And if for food needs, we will sell off portables, all the more so for Parnosa. So Rebbe would not make that distinction as we just suggested. So we still don't know what was the distinction that Rebbe made, as quoted above, that Parnosa is not like Tanai Ksuba. Ve'elo mai Parnosa eino ketanai Ksuba. What does that mean? L'chidetanya. For that which is taught in the following source. Ha'oimer, a person at the time of his death, he commands, he says, Al yozunu benoisov minechosov. Ein shomino. I don't want my daughters to be supported for their food needs from my estate. Ein shomun, we don't listen to him because he is bound by for their support mitnai ksuba. When he initially got married, that the marriage was predicated on their being supported from the estate after his death. He can't turn around and abrogate that commitment. So there we don't listen to him. However, if at a man's death he says Al yisparnesu benoisov minechosov shomin lo, I don't want any payments toward the daughter's marriage to be made from my estate, there we will cooperate. We will listen to him. Sharparnosa eino ketanai ksuba. The issue of a dowry payment is not like the issue of food payments. Rashi toward the end of the page says, Al yisparnesu shoyminlo, shaparnosa eino choyv olav ketnai ksuba. The parnosa is not a debt upon the man, upon the father, as tnai ksuba is a debt upon him. Elachayv al hayasaimim hu hecha delo tziva ha'av shelo lefarnasim. The idea of a girl receiving the Isur Nechasim from the estate is a debt upon the orphans in a case that the father had not indicated otherwise, where the father had not expressed an objection. So where the father did not express an objection, the heirs are it's their obligation to provide her with the parnosa. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.